You're listening to
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sci-Fi Dig, episode 322. This week, I'm going to discuss the episode of Fringe called The Equation. I have new DVD releases as well as some news. I'm going to jump into the news. As you know, I am a fan of The Vampire Diaries. Last couple seasons have been hit or miss as far as the story is concerned. I kind of get a little worked up over the teen angsty stuff. We still have some of that, even though some of the characters are playing teens, but there's no way that they really still are. But what draws me to the show is all the politics behind the vampires and the secrets and the fact that they work toward a goal. And then you have this always have this great reveal at the end of things working out. Just when you think that the bad guys are going to lose, they're able to pull something out that brings them on top or evens the score anyway. And it's something I usually don't see coming. Well, the Joseph Morgan, who plays Klaus, who's one of my favorite characters to hate on the series. Apparently, they're going to do a spinoff, and it's going to be called The Originals. And I'm not sure. You know, you hear about these things, and you're not sure. I'm not sure if it's actually going to happen or not, because you hear about these stories all the time and then they end up being shut down or whatever. I think that the reason they released this information is try to test the waters and what people are going to think. But this is what Morgan has to say about the project. I'm just going to give you a paragraph here. But he says, "I'm terrified I'm going to say something I'm not supposed to, but there's some huge, huge transitions and some reveals that will change the character forever. We're going to see some tremendous moments of vulnerability, but he is so, I want to swear, badass. We're going to see him cooler than he's ever been before. It'd be nice if we were picked up or even possibly during the pot to see a little bit of Klaus as the underdog, the one we're rooting for. Now, I think it will be hard for us to see Klaus as the one we're rooting for because he's just a jerk on the show. But I do like the character. You know, I've been talking a lot recently about, I've been watching some shows like Spartacus. And, you know, I kind of fell behind on Spartacus. I watched the first couple episodes of Gods of the Arena. And it was okay. I mean, my thing is that it seemed too soon for prequel. I understand why they had to do it, because the main star of Spartacus Blood and Sand of season one, you know, had cancer, and they had to put off season two to see what the prognosis was going to be. Unfortunately, it didn't end well, and they had to recast a part. So they had to fill that void, and they did Gods of the Arena, which I enjoyed what I saw, but I didn't really need the prequel stuff because I already knew what had happened. It didn't really matter, you know, to me. But I bought Vengeance, which is season two. Gods of the Arena is considered 1.5. And the final season, season three, is now airing on Stars. Don't get Stars, but I'll be waiting for the DVD release. But season two I picked up at Christmas time for $20 on Blu-ray, and I couldn't pass up the deal. And so it's always one of those shows that's very intense. And although I love the heck out of it, I have a heck of a time starting it. I'll sit there and look at it and think, I'm going to watch this, and I never do. Well, finally, I took the time and I put it in the Blu-ray player, and just like that, I was hooked again, and I couldn't help but burn right through it. I mean, the seasons are only, I mean, they're 13 episodes or less, and I really jumped into it and really enjoyed the heck out of it. It has some great villains. I mean, just fantastic villains. And, you know, one of the villains we see, I don't want to give too much away, but just say it's somebody who's in season one who is able to maneuver and connive his way into the good graces and gain some bit of power. And it was funny because I was talking with some people about it, and they were just saying how much they hate him. And I said, yeah, I hate him too. He's just a fantastic villain. I don't want to see him go. You knew in the season he had to go, because there had to be that measure, you know, where you take care of this guy who has been rotten to everybody. And you knew he had to go. There's no way they could let him go another season, because he was just too terrible. The things he'd done had been too terrible. And us watching this show had to have that retribution. And the style of the show is very blood and gore. And again, I mean, I love the show. I love the politics. I love everything about it. But this is not for the kids. I mean, there are more boobs and sex and blood in this show than any 25 action films ever in one episode of this show. I mean, there's just so much. And I couldn't wait. And I couldn't wait to watch it. And I couldn't wait for his death. And although I enjoyed, you know, the death scene, it was just, I was kind of sad because I'm like, who are we going to get to replace this guy? I mean, we've had these couple of seasons to really build him up as being this terrible bad guy. You know, it's just somebody you just loathe. I mean, you didn't hate him, you just loathed him. I mean, he was just despicable in every way. And I was just kind of sad to see him go, you know what I mean? And so, you know, I hate when we do shows and you get a good character and sometimes their death is required by us. I mean, the fact that they are defeated or they go away or whatever, it's required. And you always kind of hate it when a bad guy goes away. And so, you know, I don't know. It just, it's one of those things. And, you know, Klaus is like that on Vampire Diaries. He's just a bad guy. And they can do some things. He's not, you don't loathe him, but he's just so single-minded in his purpose, and he doesn't care who he hurts in the process. And I just really, I would like to see a show maybe if they could spin it right enough and make it work that you have some kind of feelings for him, you know, that you know you start to root for him. It doesn't happen very often, but maybe they could do that. Anyway, can't get enough of The Walking Dead. Neither can AMC. And they are going to bring Dan Simmons, The Terror. They're talking about bringing that to AMC. And The Terror is set in 1847. The crew of the Royal Navy is on an expedition to find the Arctic's treacherous Northwest Passage. It discovers instead a monstrous predator, a cunning and vicious gothic horror that stalks the ships in a desperate game of survival, the consequences of which can endanger the region and its native people forever. The article goes on to say that it smells a little bit like The Thing, and they're wondering if AMC is trying to cash in on the horror craze. And I'm not sure if they're talking about doing a movie or they're talking television, but I'm not sure if it's going to be a miniseries or if they're going to do a series on this. But hey, you know, they've done such a good job with The Walking Dead. You know, of course, if they do this like The Walking Dead where they change the showrunner every half hour, things could be different. But the last season of The Walking Dead has been pretty good as far as the action and moving the story along, and I've been enjoying the heck out of it. But, you know, The Walking Dead is kind of shaky at best. You know, I enjoy it because I love the comics and I'll watch it. I know some people hate it, some people don't. You know, this last season I've really enjoyed, you know, and we had to have the other seasons to get us here, but those seasons were rather slow compared, and I'm really enjoying the pacing going on, and I'm kind of worried about how good is the show going to be next season with a different showrunner. But anyway, I've also been watching The Americans, which is an interesting spy show. One of the things I really love about The Americans is one of the things I love about Mad Men, the fact that it's set in the 80s, and they do such a good job with the set dressing and the style and what people are wearing and all the things that are going on. And I really enjoy that, you know. I like it, not necessarily science fiction, but definitely spy, and that kind of falls into that, I don't know, it kind of all lumps together for me, you know. And I've been enjoying that. And that's about it. That's about all the news I got. I have a very long Fringe breakdown, so I'm going to move things along here. The one thing I do want to tell everybody, you need to investigate this, stay up on this. John Noble is, you can look this up. It is the name of the movie is Friend. It is based on, I believe it's based on his daughter's short story. I actually have a quote here from him. Friend was a labor of love, Noble says. During the turbulent last stage of filming the Fringe series finale, my Fringe colleagues gave their precious time and amazing talent to realize my daughter, Jessie's beautiful short film. Two intense and fun-filled days of filming, and then over to Aria Margolis and Jeremy Little to weave their magic with the editing and score. It was an unforgettable experience. I adore the film, sad and funny and special. And basically, the synopsis of this short film, it doesn't say how long it is, though. A lonely, grief-stricken man of wealth finds a new lease on life after an unusual friend is mysteriously delivered to his door. A unique and unexpected relationship quickly forms, bringing hope and color to the man's bleak existence. But will tragedy strike again? Friend will likely be making the rounds on the festival circuit this year, so keep an eye out and see if it'll end up on a screen in your city. There is a 45-second teaser that you can look for and watch. Anything with John Noble, especially after his stint in Fringe, really showing his skill, I am in, and I want to to check this out. Unfortunately, in my area, I sincerely doubt this. I'll ever be able to see this film in the big screen. Doesn't say, again, doesn't say how long it will be, but I will be, hopefully this will pop up on some of the streaming services like Netflix or Amazon that I both am able to watch on my television. So I'll be wanting to check those out, and hopefully it'll pop up there. But if anybody has any more information or knows of it coming, DVD release date or a date where we can watch it in our homes, please let me know, or go to the forum or one of the many Sci-Fi Dig groups. And speaking of that, I haven't been doing the forum much. I've been doing more of the Google Plus group. I get more feedback and more interaction on Google Plus than I do anywhere else. I haven't really been doing much with the Facebook group, but the Diggers group, the community that's available on Google Plus, just the interaction there is just much better. You can have a conversation, and I enjoy that a lot more. I post more stuff there than I do anywhere else. That just seems to be my place of choice. I know people laugh about Google Plus and blah, 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 but for me, it works. There's a lot of information, through the different communities there. I belong to several of them. That is just my choice. If anybody else has a different place or whatever, I've started groups on numerous social networks. You feel free to, post whatever. I just enjoy the interaction there more than anywhere else. It just seems that there's more of it. And, my Facebook, I kind of keep that a little bit more separate from my online activities. It's more of a family-oriented thing, although I have a group there. But I don't post a lot of, the groups I have there are open. I don't post a whole lot of stuff there. But I know some people are all into Facebook, and for whatever reason, they villainize one and not the other. They're all out to get your information. I mean, it's not, you get, it is what it is, the forums, I still visit there periodically, but to be honest with you, and I said this in the past, even though I have installed some programs to help apps on the phone, it just seems as though the Google Plus works a little bit better for me. The reply and the ease of use is just a little bit better for me on there than it is in the forums. But, I keep telling myself I'm going to try more on the forums, but I'm just going to keep playing it out. And like I said, I get more interaction on the Google Plus group than I do anywhere else. Anyway, with all that being said, let's jump into upcoming DVD releases. These are going to be for February 19th. And we have Argo, coming out. We also have Game of Thrones Season 2, already pre-ordered mine because I do not have HBO, so I have not seen it yet. Battlestar Galactica Blood and Chrome will be coming out on Blu-ray and regular DVD that aired last week on Sci-Fi. Top Gun 3D, because we need that for some reason. Monsters Incorporated. The Terminator is going to be coming out on Blu-ray. I'm curious as to what kind of transfer they did on that. If anybody picks up the Terminator on Blu-ray, if you could let me know how good that looks, because I would really be curious as to how the conversion on that went. The Nest is going to be available. Night of the Demon 2 on Blu-ray is going to be available. Best in Show on Blu-ray. If you haven't seen Best in Show, not science fiction, but a hilarious comedy. Really enjoyed that one. Let's see. Basalt Zombies. I have no idea what that is, but it's listed here, and so I'm going to mention it. The Complete Adventures of Flash Gordon is going to be available as well. And that is the 1940s Flash Gordon with Buster Crabbe. And it's going to be $15. I'm not exactly sure how many minutes long it is. It's got four discs. It's 778 minutes. So those of you that like the old school Flash Gordon, that is finally going to be made available to you. Highlander 2 Renegade Version. That must be going to be a Blu-ray, because I think that they've already released that once before. That is going to be... No, I have no idea what that's all about, because it's not a Blu-ray. It must just be a re-release. But that's kind of weird. Sinister is going to be available. And we're going to get Outlanders. Is this the seer? No, this is not what I thought it was. Sorry, I thought that was going to be very science fiction-y, but it is not. Marvel, The Avengers, Earth's Mightiest Heroes, Volume 6 is going to be available. Can we not just get a Season 1 or Season 2 release? What is up with all the volume stuff? I hate that. If you live in the UK, you're going to get Skyfall. You are going to get a ton of this Universal Steelbook stuff, and it's kind of making me angry. because we're not getting that here that I can find, unless it's coming out a little bit later. But you're going to get Scott Pilgrim on the Steelbook version. I love that movie. I don't care what anybody says. I liked it. I enjoyed the heck out of it. Saw it in the theater, bought it on Blu-ray. Love it. You're going to get The Thing, the 100th anniversary, Universal 100th anniversary Steelbook edition. The Bourne trilogy, you're going to get in Steelbook as well. I'm not into packaging, you know, different packaging, but I do like the Steelbooks, and I'm kind of mad that you guys are getting all these, and we're not. Hellboy 2, you're going to get in Steelbook. Steelbook. We're getting none of this. Nothing. Nada. Zip, zero, zilch. Maybe it's coming now. Kick-Ass, An American Werewolf in London, Casino, all Steelbook editions. Very, very upset about that. Anyway, that is what's coming. With that being said, let's jump into the Fringe episode. This week's episode is entitled The Equation, and it originally aired on November 18th, 2008, and it is episode 8 of season 1. Now, The Equation is about a young musical genius who is kidnapped, and Walter remembers a fellow patient at St. Clair's who might have been kidnapped by the same people. And the point of this episode, the overall story that I really enjoy here, is Walter has to go back to St. Clair's to try to see if he can find out more information from this inmate. And, you know, obviously this is a huge ordeal for him. You know, we're going to get to that in a minute, but that's what I liked about the episode. I mean, there's other things going on here, but what I liked about the episode was, of course, John Noble's performance. I don't want to play favorites here, but this is how it, I mean, he just does such a good job. So many great moments with him in this show. All right, so the first clip is of them getting the information on the case. You know, what you don't see here is that a woman is broke down on the side of the road, and the man with the boy, they pull over to help. He gets out, and he's trying to help her, and she talks about missing a meeting, and so he's like, well, let me take a look at your car. When he opens the hood, there are flashing lights that seem to hypnotize him. That's going to play a part throughout this episode, where these lights, red and green lights and alternate flashing, and apparently it is able to hypnotize you, and you sort of freeze, and then time flows around you, and then, you know, it's later on you realize that, you know, you have been kind of just standing there. Well, this happens. A cop startles him, you know, and asks if he can help him, and the car is gone and his kid is gone, and he starts to freak out. So we have Agent Broyles, who is giving Olivia the information about the case. I have a couple clips here. I'm going to kind of piece them together here so you kind of get the idea of what the overall story is. The one thing that I want to mention in one of the clips that I'm going to touch on this again because I think this is important for Fringe as opposed to a lot of the shows out there. We're going to touch on how Olivia connects with the victims and the families. And I think that, you know, as this series goes forward, you have a lot of that in season one, but as we about midway through season two, and we become more and more concentrated, the episodes come more and more concentrated on the Fringe team and their direct story, that, you know, we kind of get away from all the little things, and that's fine. You know, I'm not complaining about that, but I do enjoy them. You know, I do enjoy, you know, Olivia connecting with the victims. I do enjoy the little bits, little snippets we get of Olivia's home life. And all this is kind of slowly disappears over time. You know, it's fairly organic, but it kind of all goes away, and we start focusing just on the team, and I'm fine with that. It's kind of nice to when I'm doing the rewatch here to remember all these things. Until I did a rewatch of Fringe, I forgot Olivia even had a sister or a niece. But anyway, here's the clips.
His name is Ben Stockton. According to his father, they were driving home from a school function last night when he saw a woman having car trouble. The father claims that while he was looking at the woman's car, something happened. He said it was like time jumped. And his son, the woman, and her car were suddenly gone.
So he just blacked out?
In a statement he gave police, he insisted he never lost consciousness.
Any other witnesses to back up the dad's story?
No. But this is not the first time this has happened. These are from the files of three other missing person cases dating back 10 years. In each one, witnesses describe seeing the same woman. We've tried running facial recognition software, nothing.
So what happened to the other victims?
The first was found wandering the shoulder of I-91 near Northampton. The second in the supermarket, curled up in the freezer bin.
Meaning what? They were let go?
Apparently. But not before whatever had been done to them drove them insane. 2 weeks after she was found, one of the victims actually tried to lobotomize herself using a butter knife. And all of them completely incapable of recalling what happened during the abduction, even under hypnosis.
So they're all academics. A probability theorist, structural engineer. If we're looking at a serial abduction, then a 10-year-old kid really doesn't fit the bill.
No. But other than that, the details surrounding his disappearance are identical to the others. Interacting with the woman in the sketch, then experiencing an interval of lost time.
Peculiar flashing lights. Green, 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 red. Like Christmas lights.
How did you know that, Dr. Bishop?
I don't know. That's what happened, isn't it?
Yes.
Think you might be able to jog your mind, Walter? Could be kind of helpful.
Christmas lights. That's all I can recall. Sorry.
I touched her car.
The police grilled my brother for hours. They treated him like a suspect.
I know what I saw. She was real.
Why doesn't anybody believe
him? We're wasting time. We need to find Ben.
No, I believe you. In fact, we think that the same woman may be involved in a number of other abductions. This has happened before?
Why would anyone want to take my son?
I don't know. Honestly, he doesn't really fit the profile of the other victims. For one, they were all adults. And another, they were all academics. Experts in various fields. What?
Ben is kind of an expert himself.
What do you mean?
9 months ago. My wife was walking Ben to school. Some idiot late for a dentist appointment ran a red light. And they were hit in a crosswalk. Abby was killed. The doctors told me they didn't know Ben was going to make it either. He was in a coma for 6 days. And when he woke up, it's easier if I just show you. This is the day I took him home from the hospital. He hadn't spoken, said even a word, since I told him his mother died. And we got home, and he just sat down at the piano and started to play.
He's very talented.
Before this, he had never taken a single lesson. His doctors told me there had been other cases, people with severe brain traumas, waking up with the ability to do things they'd never done before. 2 weeks later, he was composing his own music. One piece in particular. He stopped being interested in everything else.
You said the other people that had been taken were accomplished at something. Do you think that that's why they took Ben? I don't know. Thank you so much for your time. Agent Dunham, after Abby died, my brother, he barely held it together. Without Ben, I don't think he'll make it. I'll do everything I can.
All right, so I hope that the sound clips mashed together wasn't too harsh, but I was trying to just kind of give you an overview of what exactly is going on here. Now, the next clip is of Walter playing around with these lights. And, of course, you know, they're red and green. So he's singing a Christmas song as he's trying to figure out how all this works.
The holes with those party.
Hey, Walter.
Do you think it's a little early in the season for the Yuletide cheer?
I'm reciting Christmas carols in an attempt to jar loose some details from my subconscious to remember where I heard mention of the green and red lights, but sadly, it hasn't yet worked.
So you thought it would be more useful to work on your Christmas tree decorations?
Though I can't recall where I heard of the lights, it did give me an idea, a theory as to how the boy was taken. I was hired to design a technology, an intricate pattern of flashing lights intended to create a suggestible state of hypnosis Theoretically, the test subjects would do whatever commanded. Bark like a dog, dance a jig, wash the car.
U.S. government had you working on mind control?
Not the government. It was an advertising agency. They hoped to broadcast the flashing lights during commercials so that the viewers would have no choice but to buy their products. Unfortunately, it merely caused nausea. Which was unfortunate because apparently people don't like to shop when they feel like they're going to throw up. Miss! Where is the remote?
Oh, hey, Walter.
Hey.
Walter, dial it down a notch, all right?
Now, I posit that the flashing lights witnessed by the father induced an hypnagogic trance, during which stage the child was abducted.
I thought you said the experiments were failures.
Oh, yes. Yeah, but I focused solely on the timing and intensity of the flashes, not the colors, the green and red. Now, I suggest that those wavelengths are the key to success. Come, let me demonstrate. Come.
What do you want me to do?
Just stare at the lights.
Sorry, Walter. Better luck next time.
Anyone ready for lunch? What's up, Chachi?
Did you do this to me?
You did.
And what Astrid is referring to is that hours have passed, and when she comes in, Peter is standing there in a t-shirt where the sleeves are cut off, and he's holding a pair of scissors in his hands. The next clip is of Broyles and Olivia having a conversation. They think that they have discovered another person who may have been abducted, and his name is Dashiell Kim. Now, Dashiell Kim, as we're going to find out, is actually in the same asylum where Walter was at.
I think we may have ID'd another abductee. Dashiell Kim, headed up astrophysics at UMass, went missing in May 2006, turned up a week later at his home outside Clarksburg, where he had a psychotic break, bludgeoned his wife to death with a tire iron. He was committed to St. Clair's Hospital.
He was there at the same time as Dr. Bishop.
Walter claims he remembers Kim telling him a story about a woman who put him to sleep with a Christmas tree and then took him away.
Green and red lights.
And he fits the profile. Expert in a scientific field. But I need you to get an interview request pushed through legal so that we can arrange a visitation. Any specific things that Kim might remember about the abduction, like where he was taken, maybe?
That might take some time.
How come?
It says here Dashiell Kim is at 1027.
What's that?
1027. Criminally insane with knowledge of state secrets. Apparently Kim had a sideline consulting on defense contracts for JPL. You can't get in to talk to him without official clearance.
How long will that take?
If we go through channels, 6 weeks minimum. I've got a contact at Justice. I'll tell him it's urgent. I don't know how a guy that can do this to his own wife is going to help you find that missing kid.
Now, Broyles is looking at photos of his brutally murdered wife, Dashiell Kim's brutally murdered wife. And, you know, in the photo, we see a room, you know, her body's laying on the ground, but there are all kind of equations drawn all over the wall. And Olivia takes this information and is sharing it with Peter. And also, well, Walter there is there as well. And I'm just going to play the next clip, and you can, you know, it's pretty brutal, and you know, it affects the whole crew here.
He did this to his own wife.
32 years of marriage. By all accounts, they seemed happy. Until Dashiell showed up after he was abducted and beat her to death.
Did I hear mention of my old friend Dashiell?
Of course. I'd recognize his handiwork anywhere.
You mean he killed others?
Well, he tried a patient at the institution, Jasper, but actually I was referring to the equation. Dashiell was obsessed with it.
Obsessed in what way?
He couldn't complete it. I tried to help him solve it once, and he came at me with a plastic spork.
What are you thinking?
Ben's father said that Ben became obsessed with this one piece of music, and he couldn't complete it either.
I've been listening to it. It's very beautiful. He's light years ahead of where even you were at that age.
Walter, take a look at this. See this function? It appears here, here, here. It just keeps on repeating over and over.
Yes, yes, yes. It's a recurring expression.
Or it's a rhythm.
Well, yes, I suppose. Are you suggesting?
Convert that into standard musical notation.
Oh, I can try.
What's going on?
Music is a mathematical language. Chords have numerical values, and the notes, quarters, eighths, sixteenths, they're all just fractions, variables.
Okay, I took the oboe for 6 months and then quit.
Almost there, Peter. Just 9 bars.
Okay, listen to this. Sound familiar?
That's Ben's song.
Yes. Ben's piece is the musical equivalent of Dashiell's mathematical formula.
So how is that possible? They'd never even met each other.
Well, it's not so surprising, actually. Curious minds often converge on the same idea. Newton and Leibniz, independently without knowing each other, invented calculus. The relevant question is, what is it?
What is what?
What is it that both Ben and Dashiell are trying to solve?
Now, the next clip is we get introduced to Dr. Sumner, who's played by William Sadler. And, wow, what a great choice for this part, because he's just such a jerk. And he has done a lot of stuff. If you don't know who he is, you need to IMDb him. He has just done a ton of both television and movies. And he's also going to make another appearance in Fringe as well later on. He's going to have an appearance on one of the episodes. But he has just done a ton of television. I mean, just so many things. I think the very first thing that I ever noticed him in that he stood out to me in was he did a Tales from the Crypt episode. And I want to say it was in the first season. It's one of the very first few where he's in charge of... He decides that he is going to be in charge of killing people, right? So he's going to go around. He works at a prison, and he goes around and he finds criminals and electrocutes them. The name of the episode was "The Man Who Was Death" from 1989. So I'm pretty sure that was the first time that he really stood out. I mean, I noticed him other things before then, but in that it was just the whole entire episode revolved just around him. Anyway. Back to Fringe. So, you know, we're going to introduce the character. I want to explain something up until now that I don't have a lot of sound clips of. I don't think I took any sound clips of it. And that's of the boy and where he's at. And he's being held in, you know, some sort of, you know, basement area. And the woman who has taken him, she has actually made him be able to see his mother, and we're not sure what's going on, but his mother comes in and is trying to, says, "Oh, you know, I missed you. His mother is dead." And says, "Oh, I missed you. You know, let's work on this equation and figure out, see if we can figure this out." So he's working on this musical piece with her. And, the general idea here that we're going to see throughout the episode is as he gets further along, but as he's not able to solve it, he starts to see his mother, slowly take on all the physical bruises and lacerations and everything from the accident. So, of course, this is really messing with his head, because as he continues to fail, her body continues to fail. And that's kind of how they're doing the controlling thing here. But anyway, let me play this clip with William Sadler. And he's just one of those guys that you just love to hate. He just does such a good job of being, a villain, but, this white collar kind of villain. And I just really, really enjoyed his character.
Dr. Sumner.
Hello.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me.
I understand you're interested in talking to one of my patients. Although I can't imagine what help Dashiell Kim could be to the FBI.
We're investigating a missing persons case, a kidnapping. And we believe that before coming here, Mr. Kim may have been the victim of an abduction himself, possibly by the same person that we're looking for.
I suppose you came by this information through a former patient of mine,
Dr. Walter Bishop.
You're the agent who took him 3 months ago, aren't you?
Yes. And you should know Dr. Bishop is doing quite well. He's been assisting us since he checked out.
He has no business being out among the rest of us.
Well, I appreciate your concern, but I'm not here to talk about Dr. Bishop.
I respect your discretion, provided you respect mine. The mental health of my patients is my primary concern. And subjecting them to open-ended interrogations by FBI agents is hardly prudent therapy. Well, I appreciate your position. And I'd like to help. But I can't subject Dashiell to new faces right now.
Dr. Sumner, I'm here because a child's life may be in danger.
There may be a way we can work this out.
I'm listening.
You've assured me that Walter Bishop is doing fine. If that's the case, I'll allow Walter Bishop to talk to Mr. Kim and ask your questions. It might do Dashiell good to see a familiar face.
Now, everything leading up to Walter entering the facility and then leaving the facility, I really enjoy because... to me, this is the heart of this episode. I know that there's bigger things that happen here that are going to play out that I'm sure are more important in the overall story. But for me, the heart of this episode is this whole conversation and this whole storyline, right? Because what would you do? I mean, in Olivia's mind, obviously, the easiest thing to do is like they can get what they want if they send Walter in. Walter has the opportunity to do something to help the fringe team that's not doesn't have to do with science, or fringe science or any of the crazy thing he's done in the past as far as experiments are concerned. He wants to save this boy as well, and he wants to do what needs to be done in order to do that. So you have all of these things, but, you're not, until, and at the time I was like, what's the big deal? But until you see Walter go in the facility and watch him change and, how he holds himself physically, how his mental state sort of changes, and how he is ultimately betrayed. It is not, you realize then it's not so cut and dried, right? And there are a lot of good audio clips I have here of the conversations that everybody has here, of Livy wanting him to go in, of Peter saying no, of Walter, doing what needs to be done. And it is one of those things when you're watching it and you see you finally get to the point where Walter is betrayed. He upsets Dashiell Kim, and during the process, rather than them sedating Dashiell Kim, they sedate him. And so I'm going to get to all those sound clips in a minute, but it's just some great acting by John Noble. I know I say that a lot, and I know that people get tired of me saying that, or you probably, I don't know if you get tired of it or not, but damn, he's just good. He's just does a real good job. And the way that, the characters of both Peter and Olivia play off of that, because basically you have Peter and Walter's relationship, then you have Olivia and Peter's relationship, and you do have a relationship between Walter and Olivia, but it's not as it's more professional in a lot of ways, and I like the way that they draw the lines, and then as time goes on, you see those relationships tighten up and fall apart and retighten up, and I really enjoy that about this show. I think a lot of shows don't spend a lot of time when you have a plot-driven show, you know, as opposed to a character-driven show, a lot of times you go one way or the other, and you don't have that middle ground. And this show does a fantastic job of having the middle ground, because a lot of the plot doesn't work unless we develop the characters. And this whole scene, series of scenes of Walter in the asylum would not work if they had not developed these characters. There's no way you could have done this before now without all the character development, because it just would not work.
Nothing to discuss.
But it's the only way we can make contact with Dashiell Kim.
Absolutely not.
Peter,
you want to send my already mentally unstable father back to the institution that made him that way?
We don't have a choice. We need to speak to Dashiell, and without Sumner's permission, we need a subpoena, which is going to take time.
Even if he speaks to Dashiell, what makes you think he's going to remember a word that he says? The man can't even remember what he had for lunch.
I have noticed that you have a habit of referring to me as if I'm not in the room. Does anyone care what I think?
Yes, Walter. What do you want to do?
I'd rather not go.
Walter.
Olivia, he said no.
That is incorrect. I said I'd rather not go. But I will. Every moment that passes is another moment that little boy's life is in danger. Isn't that correct, Agent Dunham?
Mm-hmm.
Then we should go.
Okay, next clip, and I'd like to tell you that I swear I'm going to stop going on about John Noble, but I'm not. This next scene of when he goes into the institution is, he's looking around. There's a lot of music here, you know, in the next clip. But of him coming in here and he's looking around and the way that he's moving, the way that he's walking, and it is fantastic. And you need to go back to episode 8 and just watch this scene again, and then tell me why it doesn't have an Emmy. Somebody tell me, because this is just unreal. When I'm watching this scene, I am feeling all the fear and trepidation and the I am feeling him thinking in his head, saying, hey, you know, I don't want to be here. This is absolutely terrible, but I can't whine. I can't run. I can't bolt from the room. I have to stay the course because I'm trying to save this kid. That's what I'm seeing. And maybe I'm looking too far into, but that's what this scene does for me. And just, again, why doesn't he have an Emmy or, you know, all of them?
Are you ready?
When you get out, we'll be right here.
Good luck, Walter.
Come with me.
Okay, the next clip is him actually getting into the same room as Dashiell Kim. I know that last clip was kind of long for the small amount of dialogue, but I was really kind of digging the music. And it'll help you find that scene, because I expect everybody listening to the podcast who has season 1 on DVD to go back and watch this, because it is just outstanding what a good job he does here. And also, there's a couple other moments, but I really like that moment because there's no real dialogue with him. He's just kind of looking around. And the next clip, I kind of trimmed off the beginning. I didn't mean to, but one of the guards says, hello, Walter. And he says, oh, I'm not staying. And then, you know, he says, well, it's nice to see you anyway. So I kind of trimmed that off. But anyway, here's a clip where he approaches Dashiell Kim. I love saying that name, Dashiell Kim. And trying to get the information that he needs.
Yeah, well, it's nice to see you anyway.
You have 10 minutes, Walter.
Yeah.
me, Walter. Walter Bishop. Walter?
You look different.
It's a beard. And you look different, too, somehow. That smile. Have they altered your medication? Wouldn't surprise me. These medieval quacks are more proficient at phrenology than psychopharmacology.
I miss your jokes, Walter.
And I miss your stories. The one about the woman who took you away with the green and red lights. Dasha, look at me. This is important. The woman, where exactly did she take you?
I'm sorry. I don't know what you're referring to. You must be mistaking me for someone else. Now, if you'll excuse me, I want to sit here and finish my butterscotch pudding in peace. Mathematical formulations are not conducive to my mental stability.
It's fine, but if you recognize the equation, do you not remember the woman with the red and green lights where she took
it? I don't do math anymore!
You used to tell me the story all the time.
No, no, no!
You used to drive me crazy.
Don't do math anymore!
Dr. Bishop.
No, I need to know where she took you. Damn,
that's
no.
Enough. It's time to go.
Where is she?
I've got her, Dasha.
Please, Dasha, tell me where she is.
What do you mean you sedated him? Walter is legally in my custody. You have no right to keep him here.
Not only do I have every right to hold him, I have a responsibility to hold him. He accosted Mr. Kim. If I release him and something else happens...
I can assure you that's not going to happen. He's under our supervision.
Perhaps that's what compounded the problem.
Meaning what?
I had some time to talk to Dr. Bishop after he calmed down about his work assisting you. And it is clear that exposing him to the pressures of criminal investigations while indulging his fantastical pseudo-scientific notions has exacerbated the worst features of his mental illness.
Really?
Really.
Because after some of the things I've seen in the last 3 months, Walter strikes me as being one of the sanest people I know.
Is that so?
I'm going to make this really simple, Dr. Sumner. Walter Bishop is assisting us in a criminal investigation which you are currently obstructing. So either you release him into our custody, or I will get a court order.
You go get your court order, then.
And Dr. Sumner is just an absolute douche. I mean, you just want to slap him in the face. But that just William Sadler. I mean, he just plays a fantastic character. Anytime he takes a hold of these characters. You watch him in all the shows that you've seen him in. And, you know, as you know, time goes on, especially in a more modern era where we have IMDb and things like that, you know, like you back in the day, you know, 70s, you had like the same bad guys, right? You had the same people who would play bad guys. They kind of got pigeonholed into that area. And they were kind of like the fill-in bad guy, which isn't a bad thing, okay? They were kind of, you know, I can't think of anybody offhand. I have a couple of people's faces in my head, but I can't think of their name because that's how it was. You didn't really know who they were. And you kind of plugged them into any situation, and they were the fill-in bad guy. They were always there. They did a good job and everything. But, you know, through their career as an actor, that's kind of what they played. And you took them for granted, you know, and then some of these people have passed over the years and they're no longer there, and trying to find somebody else who has refined that. And especially when you did like a lot of television, you had the same guy playing a bad guy in all these different shows. It's kind of like when he showed up on the show, you knew that he was going to be the bad guy, right? Now, with William Sadler, it isn't always like that, because sometimes he plays a good guy, you know, sometimes he plays a very, mix, you know, but I have always loved his character. I've always loved the fact that when he plays a bad guy, he doesn't have to be straight out like angry and you know, hurting people or whatever. Sometimes it's very mild mannered, and the way that he carries each individual character, depending on what they do and what his role is, he's just always done a very good job. And in this particular episode, he was one of the standout actors, because I, you know, right away, you just didn't like the guy. You knew how it was going to be. He wasn't a helpful guy at all. He's trying to take control. He doesn't think that Walter ever should have left. He seems quite bitter that it was taken out of his hands. You know, that basically he's in charge of this facility, and somebody came in and said, "Yeah, we're taking this guy. There's nothing you can do about it." You know, and he doesn't think that that he should be free for what he did. He doesn't think that he has been rehabilitated, and he certainly shouldn't be working for the government in any kind of capacity. Anyway, before I go any further in the episode, there's a couple things, you know, I want to tell you about the episode. First of all, the glyphs spell out Taken, and the bald man. Did anybody see the bald man at this point in time? You should have seen him this far along in the episode, but the Observer pops up when Olivia and Charlie are doing like a door-to-door search for Ben, the boy who was kidnapped, and you see him. And again, I took a screen cap, and I will include it with the when I post the podcast. So if those of you that have not been going to the website, scifidig.com, if you go for each individual episode, if there is an appearance of the bald man, one that I think needs to be pointed out, I've been doing screen caps and putting them up there when I do the release, so that way you can, you know, see him in case you didn't, you know. Like there's a couple episodes like The Arrival. Well, that's pretty obvious where he's at, so I didn't do any screen caps because he's in a lot of scenes, but I love the game of trying to pick him out, you know, in different scenes and see where he is. Sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's hard. This one was particularly difficult, and there was I'm starting to get pretty good at figuring out where he's going to be, because you have a lot of scenes inside the lab. He's not going to be there, so you have to kind of look, and he's usually observing the fringe team, right? So you have to kind of look when they're out in the street, or they're in an office building, or you know, when an event is about to occur, you know, sometimes beforehand, you know, you have to look around. But I've been doing pretty good so far. I haven't had to cheat since a couple of episodes ago, when I told everybody I had to go look it up because I could not find him. But anyway, next clip. Oh, it needs some setup. Olivia is trying to get the court order to get Walter out. Unfortunately, there is no way to hurry that, so he's going to have to stay in there until morning. During this time frame, Peter decides to kind of help out. There's some things he knows, you know, they're trying to figure out this lady's alias, and he is able to help them do that by taking her name and spinning it a couple different ways. And then he figures out what alias she's going by.
Okay, 7 a.m. Thank you.
What was that?
Okay, we have to wait till morning for the court order to have Walter released.
But then he's out.
I promise, and I'm sorry, and obviously you were right.
No, this was Walter's choice.
Okay. So if you want to go down to reception, someone can arrange a ride, and then at least one of us can get some sleep.
The woman who abducted Ben, Joanne Osler. Up until now, everybody thought she was dead, right?
Yeah.
Well, she's been walking around for the last 10 years. She must have been using somebody's name.
We didn't get any hits on an alias search.
What'd you base the search on?
On anagrams. Combinations of different family names. It's what most people use if they want to change their identity.
Thanks. I know that. I've done this once or twice myself.
Why doesn't that surprise me?
The best lie, the one that's easiest to remember with consistency, is the one that's based on the truth. Whenever I would do this, I would base it on my own last name, Bishop. So, Peter King, Peter Knight.
Well, that's a great idea if your last name is as simple as Bishop. What do you do when it's Osler?
Is there a computer around here I could use?
This is a serial abductor, so she's smart. She's probably switched cars since then. I want a record of every stolen car from the last 36 hours.
Hey, what is this print?
And with that, he is able to use his sketchy background in order to help them figure out what alias he's going by. And in this next clip, he explains it.
Hustler, Middle English for innkeeper.
Hold on. Middle English.
The point is, innkeeper got me to hotel, so I cross-indexed last name to match hotels with her first name.
Joanne Ritz.
No photo, just a P.O. box in Clarksburg.
P.O. box.
Criminals don't really like people like you knowing where they live.
Can you expand the grid search for Ben Stockton to Clarksburg?
What is it, Ben? What's wrong?
I don't see it.
It's okay, Bean. You're doing great, honey. Mom?
No. Please, I don't want to go away.
Well, that's up to Ben, isn't it?
Mom. Stop! What are you doing to her?
If you lose her again, you'll only have yourself to blame.
And of course, Ben is seeing his mother deteriorate before his eyes, and that is how they are taking control of him. That's how they are, you know, frightening him into doing, you know, what they need him to do. Now, the next clip is Walter is still in the institution. So the next clip is of Walter, and he has approached Dashiell Kim again, and it's just the two of them, and they're sitting outside, and he's trying to have a conversation, trying to get the information he needs.
There's a little boy out there. He's in trouble. We're his only hope.
I don't want to talk about math, Walter.
Okay. Don't need to talk about the equation. I need to know about the woman. Where she took you.
You're wrong. There was no woman.
If you don't, the boy, he'll end up like us.
Walt, please. I can't.
Yes, you can.
It was so beautiful. She promised me things. What I wanted most of all. But when I couldn't solve the equation, she took it away. Everything she promised, it was all a lie. None of it was real. She hurt me. She put me in a dungeon. She filled my mind with images of people I loved and then tortured them, ripping them apart. All the while trying to suck the answer she wanted out of my head. But I couldn't give her what she wanted.
Where were you, Dash?
I told you, a dungeon.
No, not some fantasy you'd need to it. Where were you really?
A dungeon in a red castle.
You listen. You answer. No. Don't you understand?
No, listen.
This is the only way we'll find him.
None of it happened.
It was just a dream. Just a bad dream.
A fantastic scene there. I really enjoyed it, and I really liked how Walter said, you know, we don't want him to become one of us, you know. And I really thought that that's what kind of was pushing Dashiell Kim. But anyway, just, you know, a great scene. The thing that kind of surprises me is when you're looking at these episodes, right? Like when you look them up, like on IMDb or any of the other different TV sites out there, there's always ratings for the episodes, right? And, you know, I'm never sure if the ratings, if there's a cutoff. Well, apparently not, because you can, you have to register or log in order to rate on IMDb, but you can still make a rating. But what amazes me is this episode only has a 7.7. I think that's kind of a low rating. Now, I know that overall, maybe there were parts of the episode as a standalone episode, yeah, it doesn't really work. But everything that ties in here, the equation and what it's used for, and I'm going to get to that at the end here, is a major, major thing in the series. The fact that Walter has to go back to St. Clair's is also another big thing. And I'm just kind of surprised at the low rating. And I realize that maybe it might not be low for some, but you know, this episode rates at least an 8 in my book. This is probably, you know, I'm not exactly sure why I don't rate it higher. Maybe that's the problem. I shouldn't complain about the ratings if I can't figure out why I wouldn't rate it higher. But you know, I guess it's kind of like a preface, you know, it kind of setting everything up for what's about to happen in the series. But it just, I mean, everything was well acted. It had a solid story. It everything kind of made sense. And the Walter storyline in this episode is just so outstanding to me, and just made such a huge difference. And the way this kind of ends up at the end here, and I'll get to that in a minute, I just kind of thought that overall it would have a much higher rating than what it does. Anyway, the next clip is of it happens between Peter and Dr. Sumner again. And, you know, Peter's there to get his dad out. He has his court order or whatever. And Dr. Sumner's still kind of cocky, but he can't figure out how in the heck the letter he has received is from Homeland Security. And he's a little taken aback by that. But just, again, another fascinating interaction. And then the final interaction between Peter and Walter, when Walter's sitting there at the table with like his pudding or his fruit cup in front of him, and Peter's like, you know, you're ready to go. And the exchange that they have, is just another, just, I love everything about this. I just can't get over how good it is. And I can't get over, I mean, all the scenes that take place in the asylum, just worked so favorably, for John Noble. I mean, he really brought it to life and really made us, made us feel what he's feeling, which is this despair.
You're making a terrible mistake. Despite whatever strings you've managed to pull, your father is not mentally fit to be released from this hospital.
Thanks for the advice. My personal assessment is that he's safer with me than he is with you. He may not be the picture of sanity, but yesterday when I saw him come through that door, I saw him change. He was afraid.
So what are you saying? He's saying that I somehow managed to intentionally harm him. Office of Homeland Security. How'd you pull this off?
Meaning
that since you were here last, I learned a little bit about you. Enrolling at MIT based on fraudulent credentials, starting businesses and failing, and then running away from...
Do you have a point?
You are not a fit guardian for Walter. And I'm going to petition the state to have him removed from your custody.
Excuse me?
Whether you're willing to recognize it or not, Walter is a danger, both to himself and to others.
And I guess the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Because you may think you know what he's capable of, but you have no idea what I'm capable of.
Are you threatening me?
I'd like to see my father now.
Uh-huh.
Are you okay?
I'd like to go now.
Of course. We'll go right now.
It failed. It was all for nothing. Dashiell went on like an incoherent loon about being taken to dungeons, red castles. Son, is that what it's like to talk to me? Mother.
Let's go home.
Now, Walter and Bishop do go home, and the next clip is of them arriving at their mutual apartment. In the meantime, Agent Dunham is able to track down where the boy is being held. She finds the Red Castle. They go in. She has one heck of a great fight scene with the woman who has been kidnapping people. You know, this nurse and Osler, and I couldn't remember her name there. Sorry. So she has the big fight with her, and Osler runs down the hallway. Olivia draws her gun, tells her to freeze. Osler hits a button on her remote. The lights flash. Next thing we know, she's gone, and Olivia has been staying there for I don't know how long. Charlie Francis comes up behind her, and she jumps and is like, where'd she go, you know? And we follow Osler ends up meeting with Mitchell Loeb, who's a double agent. And she gives him to solve the equation that Ben has done from the composition. Loeb types the equation to a computer, and then he attaches a strange looking thing to a safe, and he puts an apple inside and puts on his big glove and turns this thing on. He's able to stick his hand through the strange looking thing he put on the safe and pull the apple out. And then he promptly kills Osler. And they have the sound clip here when he talks about numbers and equations, but let me play the one of Peter and Walter arriving back at the apartment first.
Nice to be home, Ray.
This place is filthy. Did you have a party while I was gone?
No, Walter, I did not have a party.
I don't want you to take this the wrong way, but I need space.
Oh?
Sorry to spring this on you so suddenly, but these quarters are very cramped. I think I'm ready for my own room.
Well, that's not a problem. I can talk to Olivia tomorrow about getting you some on-campus housing.
That would be very beneficial.
You know, what you did by going back into that place was very, very brave, Walter.
Thank you, son.
So the trip to the asylum wasn't all bad for Walter, because I think he realized that he wants his independence, and that since he did that on his own and experienced all that, I think that he is feeling that, you know, then he can go ahead and be on his own a little bit. He can have a place of his own, and he doesn't have to live with his son anymore. And you know, he can kind of stretch his legs a little bit and take the next step in his recovery. Anyway, I'm going to play the clip between Osler and Mitchell Loeb.
Where's the equation?
Seems crazy that some numbers can make a machine like this work.
Look around your house, your office, your kitchen. Numbers make everything work. Here we go.
And with that, he inserts his hand into the safe and pulls out the apple. He ends up shooting her so that there is no loose ends. And he makes a telephone call, and the only thing he says is, it worked. And that's all we're going to find out about that for now. But know that the teleportation, I don't know if you call it, it's not teleportation, but the ability to phase through solid objects is going to play a big part in the upcoming episodes, and we'll get more to that when I get to those. Now I have one final clip, and it was kind of important to play this clip, I felt, because It's the payoff clip. It's when Ben and his father are reunited in the FBI offices.
You hungry? Because there's a vending machine in the hall, and I've got a roll of quarters.
No, I'm okay. Thanks.
Sure? Mm-hmm.
Ben?
Dad?
Ben!
Dad!
Police forms. As soon as he signs, they're free to go.
Yeah, we should maybe just let them have a minute. No, I really need to call Peter and Walter. After what Walter went through, he'll be happy to know that Ben's all right.
Good work.
And I enjoyed that final clip because we don't get to see much of that in this show. We don't get that like bookend ending, you know, where they're reunited and everybody's happy and you know. But I enjoyed the exchange between Broyles and Dunham, and you know, once again, Dunham showing that her passion is one of the things that drives her, and I think that Broyles is seeing that more and more as the episodes progress and their work together progresses. But overall, this is a solid episode. I really enjoyed it. What pushed it over the top for me, obviously, was, you know, Walter going in the asylum, as I said. And, you know, one of the things I did not mention that I thought was important is we're never quite sure how, you know, about 3/4 of the way through the show, we're not sure how the boy is able to see his mother. But when we go later on, they're showing that what has happened here is Osler has put a contraption around his head. He's actually sitting in a hospital bed and she has a keyboard in front of him. And so she's actually programming all this stuff into his mind and making him see his mother and all that stuff. And that is how this is all being done. It's an important thing to mention because when you're first watching, you're like, how is this even possible? Because you're thinking if this woman is alive, then, you know, there's, you know, this, the show has really kind of jumped the shark, you know, as far as what's going on. But we do see that. We do see the fact that this is all happening in his head and not in real life. Anyway, a great episode. I hope everybody enjoyed the breakdown and was able to find the Observer and, you know, check out the glyphs and all that stuff. But next time we are going to have, what is the next? The next episode is going to be The Dreamscape, Episode 9. Thanks for taking the time to download and listen. And as always, scifidig@gmail.com is where you can find me, send me email, send me whatever. Also, go to scifidig.com and you can do the million things there. Twitter, Google+, the Sci-Fi Dig Google community. The Sci-Fi Dig Google group, don't have the Facebook listed there, but you can find it on Facebook. It's an open group and you have the comment line 304-907-0656. And you can also follow my photo a day project. Some photos are good. Some photos are okay. Some photos are bad, but it's all in good fun. If you click on that link, you'll see that, there are other diggers that are also doing the photo a day thing. I'm enjoying the heck out of that. I got to say, that's one of some of the most fun I've had. I enjoy seeing everybody else's stuff. I mean, I see it on Flickr as well, cause I'm usually friends with everybody that's taking photos in Flickr. If you want to join in, do not hesitate to ask me. All I got to do is send you an email invite to the page. And, from there you can use whatever social thing you'd use to take photos. You can use whatever you want to use. And, it can push the stuff there. And the name of the blog is shootthephoto.blogspot.com. Plenty of people are interacting here. It is a good time. I'm really enjoying the heck out of it. You kind of get, an enjoyment into, a look into people's lives as you, you know, as you go throughout your day. But I post all kind of different stuff there, you know, sci-fi stuff, non-sci-fi stuff. I like to take a lot of pictures of action figures and Legos. It's just because they're the perfect model because they don't move and they do whatever I tell them to do. And anyway, so those are a million ways you can interact. Feel free to join in the fun. I will talk to everybody next time. This is Aaron for the Sci-Fi Dig podcast. Over and out.